in the early 1970s. First of all, I'm very grateful to you. It's my honor and my pleasure to be with all of you. Thank you for coming. Now back to the early 1970s. I heard a story. I get influenced by stories sometimes. I was living on a little muddy mountain in a very faraway place, and some people told me a story of my beloved Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada. He was in Mayapur. This is a very holy place in India where Lord Chaitanya appeared in this world. And for many, many centuries, great saintly people have been going there to live, to worship. So Srila Prabhupada, after much struggle and challenge, he was able to procure plot of land in a kind of isolated place. It was mostly just rice paddies in the area. And he wanted to build a place of pilgrimage that people from all over India and all over the world could come for their spiritual rejuvenation. He hardly had any funds whatsoever. In fact, when he first started living there, he lived in a little hut made out of straw in these rice paddies. There were no toilets, just the fields. Very eco-friendly system. And when monsoons came, some devotees who were cobras used to swim to make their residence in the roof of the hut to get out of flooded waters. So, kind of like living in New York City with unpredictable neighbors. But cobras are quite predictable. So, at one point he brought the leaders of the society. There weren't that many in those days, but they were the most trusted and influential people in our spiritual society. They were taking large responsibilities. Srila Prabhupada was walking with them through a field. There's not much around. And he was talking about what he would like to be done in different places. Then he became very excited. And he pointed his cane toward one field and said, "Don't you see?" And everyone was looking. He just saw a field. So they didn't say anything. He said, "Don't you see?" And they looked at each other and looked at the field and looked at each other and looked again at the field. And he said, "Don't you see?" And they were thinking, maybe Prabhupada's seeing Krishna there. And we don't have the eyes to see. Finally, somebody said, "What are we supposed to see?" And Prabhupada walked into the field, and there was a water faucet that was leaking water. He walked all the way out into the field, turned off the water faucet, and came back. He He said, Krishna consciousness means to honor what Krishna or God has given us, not to waste anything. Now that was an interesting story, but it actually had a tremendous impact on me. I never forgot that story. I only heard it once. I hope it was true. But that stayed within me. How respecting Mother Nature and utilizing her resources with compassion is an integral part of being God conscious. Because we know that Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikritir Ladini Shakti Rashma, that the Absolute Truth is one. There's one God. He has many names and has come in many times, in many places, to establish many religions. But there's one God. And in each manifestation of Sanatana Dharma, he's ultimately teaching us Prema Kumartama, that the highest goal is to love God. And what does it mean to love God? That one absolute truth of Krishna has a feminine power, Sri Radha. The two together are the one God, Radha Krishna. And in the Vedic literatures we find that Sri Radha is the embodiment of all compassion, the embodiment of all forgiveness, and the source of grace. That grace is the most powerful force in all existence. It's that grace alone that can open our hearts to blossom and awaken with the love that's within us, the inherent love. Love of God cannot be attained, no matter how many lifetimes we fast, no matter how little sleep we could get by with, no matter how many times we could chant names and meditate. Ultimately, all these different spiritual activities are to connect us with that grace. And it's that grace that opens our hearts and reveals that love that has been forgotten. Sri Radha is the source of that grace. And when she manifests within material creation, she is Bhumi, Mother Earth, Durga, the mother of material nature. And through the grace of Bhumi Devi, or Sri Radha's expansion, God's expansion, Mother Earth is providing everything to us. We are completely dependent on her. In many parts of the world, we say Mother Earth. And the Vedas is a very deep concept of how she's our mother. She's actually the eternal mother of our souls, who's coming in this world to be the mother of every aspect of our life also. Sunshine, the rain, the food, grains, the soil we stand on, the air we breathe, are all supplied by her. Whether we are simple villagers or multimillionaires, whether we're illiterate or we have multi-PhDs, whoever we are, we're all like infant babies, totally dependent on Mother Earth. It's like a little baby's dependent on Mother. A two-day-old baby can't just say, forget you, I can do it myself. They don't even know how to talk. fucking say it yet. You need to learn how to talk. Completely dependent on the mother. And actually, no matter who we are, we're always even more dependent on mother. So in bhakti, the concept of being respectful and honoring the gifts of Mother Earth are very inseparable to the nature of our devotion to God, to Krishna. So this idea of environmentalism or eco-friendly lifestyle is a very essential part of the yogic path. Because we receive grace to the degree we are grateful and willing to reciprocate with it. Otherwise, we can't recognize it. This chanting of the holy names, these sacred mantras, it puts into that grace. And as we're chanting these beautiful names of God, if we live in a spirit of seva, then it has a very, very powerful effect of bringing total peace and total love to our life. Every drop of water is like a diamond. It's so precious. We should be eager to save it. Diamonds are falling from the sky. And we're just letting it just go into the ground. So the idea of really recognizing Krishna is being grateful for what is given and utilizing it with compassion. And in this spirit, every living being is a child of Mother Earth. And every living being is a child of the Supreme. Aham bija pradapita, Krishna tells. I am the father and mother of all beings. So you cannot honor and respect the mother and father without showing compassion to their children. Yes, how many of you here are mothers? Let me ask a question. Everyone's going to have to raise their hand. How many of you have mothers? So you know that. If you honor the mother and father, kick the little baby in the face. They're not going to be happy with you. We do all the day, all the time, in the name of religion in this world. We worship God and then we kick the children in the face. Yes. Maybe even worse. So when Srila Prabhupada turned off that little water faucet, just one little activity like that, being performed with such deep spiritual realization, compassion, and love for God. What an impact. And when we had the concept of starting this eco-village, that little story was actually my inspiration. That was the seed. Srila Prabhupada explained this concept of simple living and high. That we don't need a lot of things to be happy. What will make us happy is our values. And ultimately our understanding of that we are eternal souls, so we have a relationship with God, with Krishna. And in that relationship, we have a relationship with all the resources of Krishna. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. Krishna says, everything in creation is my property. Everything here is his property. We'll use it and honor it. So I read about it so many times heard that story of Prabhupada turning off that water faucet. Yes, this is not just theory. This is something extremely practical. So let's get land and try to make a model for the world of how to really live in that. When we have bhakti, when we have devotion to Krishna, we will naturally have respect, compassion, and love for everything connected to Krishna. Because to be able to be compassionate to humans, it's contradictory if we don't treat the animals, the trees, the air, the rivers, and the mountains nicely. Because everything is interdependent. That's the way creation was made. When I was a little boy, I saw the movie Frankenstein with Boris Karloff. How many of you have seen it? And then I saw The Bride of Frankenstein. Bela Lugosi, Basil Rathbone, and Boris Karloff. That was a scary movie. And I thought they were just scary movies. But really, there's a lesson in that. In all of them. And that was the idea that Mary Shelley had when she wrote that book. That even in the name of doing things that are beneficial, don't understand how to live in harmony with God and nature, then our progress will become like a monster that comes back to haunt us. And we very much see that that's what's happening. Srila Prabhupada gave an example that if you're going in a direction, if you start going off in a direction, if you have the direction wrong, then the more progress you make, the further you get. Mm-hmm. So in the same way, the basis, Krishna tells in the Gita, Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarva lokamaheshwaram suhritam sarva bhutanam yapamam shantirashtiti. If we want to be peaceful, individually or collectively, there's three principles that must be understood. That the Supreme Lord is the origin of everything. He's our best friend and well-wisher. And that everything in creation is the property of that Lord, of the Supreme. And that to utilize everything in harmony with the will of God is our nature. It's what the soul is seeking, the love that comes through that lifestyle. But when we forget that, and we think I'm the proprietor, I'm the controller, I'm independent, then everything we start doing becomes off. In today's world, a lot of good intentions. But we have these nuclear bombs that were created in the name of science for the welfare of humanity. And we have all this global warming. And we have all this pollution. And we have so many diseases based on chemicals, stress, and so much depression in society due to the fast pace and result-oriented and the kinds of food we eat and the water we drink and the air we breathe. So when we started this eco-village, we wanted to explore every possibility to be a model of give real practical ways that are based on what we call symbiotic development. That means that we are recognizing how everything is interconnected. Through our bhakti, we reconnect with God. Is this on? It is, really. I guess it's the way it's supposed to be. Interdependence of humans, of trees, of the sun, of the rain, of animals. So some of the projects we have, which you saw that we have natural organic farming. All of the food that we grow there is 100% without any type of chemicals. And it actually grows better. There are so many traditional methods of keeping pests away without poisoning your food with chemicals. And it really works. Instead of causing cancer, we can actually get real nutrition. And in our farming, we have explored various types of indigenous seeds. There used to be hundreds of varieties of rice in it. And rice was medicine. There was green rice, and purple rice, and brown rice, and black rice. I don't remember white rice. That's about all we have these days. When the British came to India, they wanted to export rice for a different purpose. So practically all the varieties of rice that were in India for millenniums, there's only one or two places in the whole country that has retained some of the seeds. Well, we got many of those seeds. We're growing those rices. They have different fragrances, different flavors, different medicinal values, different nutritious values. We get many tons of rice, vegetables. I think we have a couple thousand fruit trees. It's all growing very nicely. We care for the animals. Srila Prabhupada emphasized cow protection. And cow protection, when it's done properly, it's not just to not kill them. It's actually to show them love and respect as children of Krishna. And if you actually are in the proper spirit of cow protection, then you'll have that same spirit of compassion toward all different types of animals. Because when we understand how there's a spirit soul in a cow, we'll also be able to gradually recognize that that spirit soul is in all the animals. We read in the Holy Scriptures of great people, how even insignificant little animals, that they were so compassionate. So we have cows. Built a really nice goshala for them, a place. We give them natural grasses. They graze in the mountains every day for several hours. And we last year I went there, and the cows were really happy. Srila Prabhupada said the barometer of the spiritual level of any society is how happy the cows are. Not just that they're not dying, but how happy they are. All quality of their lives. So I was thinking this is important. And I see in New York sometimes people have these little gardens on their roofs or in some little lots so they can actually get an experience of being close to nature. It's very nice to have that connection. So on our eco village, we have about 70 monks living there, about 30 families. We have an orphanage with about 50 children. And there's just a few people to take care of the cows. So the cows, everyone should love the cows. It shouldn't be theoretical, it should be practical. So I was there, and I made a proposal. A proposal that there be a policy that everyone living in the whole community should personally serve the cows minimum 3 hours a week. And everyone really liked the idea. So they started doing it. All these hundreds of people. They all, every other day they come for an hour or so and they brush the cows and feed the cows and bring and do so many things for the cows. They herd the cows. Sounds like she wants to be with the cows. So the next time I came, which was just recently, to the Eco Village, after I did the policy, some months later, I went to the Goshawa, and all these cows started surrounding me. Really enthusiastic, like putting their necks up like, rush me. They just love people. They really love people. Why do they love people? Because people are showing their love for them. And I was thinking, we should be like that with each other. If we want to be loved, we give love. People are not much different than cows. People love cows are people too. So they just love people. And sometimes guests come and they go and the cows come running up to them like, pet me, pet me. It's a culture shock. We have about 70 cows and bulls and calves. They're loved. And then we have, we're not sectarian, we have donkeys. Why do we get donkeys? Because they're people. Nobody says nice things about donkeys. Another name for a donkey is an ass. So has anyone ever complimented you by calling you an ass? You are beautiful like an ass. You have eyes like a donkey. You're intelligent like a donkey. Nobody says. The Buddha, they all, stupid like an ass, stupid like a donkey, stubborn like a donkey, mule, like that. So, what we named the donkeys? Kamala and Amboja. Two names of lotus flowers. And when the donkeys, they were completely abused, like every other donkey in India, really just overworked and terribly abused. And they have all kinds of scars on them. And when we first got them, they were petrified whenever ever a person came near them. They would just tremble. But now I warn you, don't come up and lick you. Sometimes. Yeah. It
did it along the way. Because they feel loved. And they like to do service. They love to do service because they feel they want to reciprocate. And we have sheep. What is the sound of a sheep? Baba, yes? We named one of them Babaji. And you have goats. Named Daksha. And dogs. Julie loves the dogs. Julie, you're still here. She fell in love with our dogs. She's sponsoring the dogs. She's built houses and swimming pools. And all the monks are like, what's the Sanskrit for dog? Swag? And Sanskrit for mother is ma. So I might be Swami, but she's Swama. And they're the happiest dogs I've ever seen in India. And they also do guarding, they do seva. They like to do seva. So the animal protection is very special. And it extends to so many. Seeing that God is in the heart of everyone, and everyone is a part of Krishna. Mamai Bhamsa Jiva Lake, Jiva Bhamsa. The building of our buildings is called green building. Where we try to build with the minimal consumption. Because today's building with fire bricks and cement has a very, very heavy toll on our environment. So the traditional way of making bricks that I've found with great years of research actually is how to make bricks with your own soil and just compressing them a certain natural just machine, it's just a press. There's no electricity, it's just pulling human power. Those bricks are supposed to last for hundreds of years, and they're really beautiful. They're just made out of the local soil. And we get tens and thousands of those bricks. We found a lady named Chitra, who was the foremost, one of the foremost eco-friendly builders in India, and she taught us many of these things and helped us to design the houses. You just dry them in the sun for a couple days, and then you're done. And they're actually very pleasing. Water conservation is a great priority there. Experts have said that as there has been wars based on coal and oil, in the future there very well may be wars based on water. It's one of the greatest problems, especially in third world countries. Drought. The state we live in, Maharashtra, is almost always drought. There's a monsoon rain that lasts about 3 to 4 months, and usually there's not a drop of water for 8 to 9 months.
months after that. So we store the water from the monsoons lasts all year. But nobody does that. So we're trying to build a model. So we made this lake, you saw it in the movie. There's four of those lakes. One is very large. And with those lakes, within about a week of the monsoons, the lakes are full. And that water lasts for the whole rest of the year after the monsoons. Watering our fields, providing water for our homes, for cooking, for bathing. And we're developing this technology. We've done it in some places, and we're trying to expand it where we have tanks near each building or each house. And all the water that goes on the roof during rains goes into a gutter and in a very natural way just goes into the underground too. And we found that just through a few rains, it fills the tank and there's enough water for that house for the whole rest of it. 6-8 months. Water harvesting. Enough for crops, enough for our trees. One of my favorite projects there is soil biotechnology. Now that's a very sophisticated word for a natural sewage system. Because sewage is for real. Yes? How many of you contribute to that? Doesn't matter who you are. If we analyze nature nicely, we're all, it doesn't matter what color we are, or what sex we are, or what religion we are, or what nationality, or what social, economic background. Everyone responds to nature's calls in a similar way. And it all, more or less, whoever you are, it kind of smells and looks the same. So what to do with that stuff? That's a big problem. So much disease and so much pollution is based on what we do with our soil. According to government of India, 21% of all communicable diseases in India are due to polluted water. Which is due to sewage in the water or due to agricultural drainage, that means the chemicals. So if you don't use chemicals and pesticides and you have a way to actually treat your sewage, there is not that problem is solved. So we have a devotee, and he got his PhD at IIT, the premier technological institute of all of India. He got his PhD in creating the soil biotechnological sewage system. I'd love to tell you all the details. It's fascinating. You flush your toilet. Or you turn on your sink and it goes down the drain. And by gravity and by solar power, it goes into a tank. And there it kind of merges the solids and the liquids. And becomes kind of, just by sitting in the sun, it kind of gets treated. And then by solar power, it goes up to this area where there's just gardens. It's like a raised garden. About 10 feet up. And the gardens have different tiers going down. So all the sewage goes down into the ground, and there's special herbs and special rocks and special different kind of insects and special trees and roots that are growing there, and plants that are scientifically proven to purify the water. And
by the time the water comes out at the end, it's crystal clear, good water. For aesthetic reasons, we don't drink it. But it can either be utilized to be put back into the sewage system, or it can be used for the crops. It's really, really good water. And some yoga students came there last year, and they looked at it, and they were so thrilled by the whole concept. I'm thrilled by it, too. You have to see it to believe it. Our gardens are really beautiful and flourishing because we have all this water that's you know, saved throughout the year. And everything's growing. It's such so natural and organic. It's just beautiful. But when you go to that raised garden where all your sewage is being treated, it's like paradise up there. Down below the papayas are this big. But up there the papayas are this big. So that's what Goranga said in the movie. Every time you flush your toilet, the papaya is getting bigger. One of the yoga students called them, no, this is not me, this is the world he's speaking. She called them papayas. It's just beautiful. And we have waste management. Waste management, it's a philosophy. It's the concept of symbiotic living. That when we take something from Mother Nature, we should give something nourishing and healthy back to Mother Nature. There's no reason why we can't do that in every aspect of our life. If we just have proper consciousness, we understand the value of it. With all of the human intelligence and all the money we put into so much research, we can make this world an incredible place if we just have the right vision and values. Whatever we take from nature, the waste should actually be invigorating, nourishing to nature and for the well-being of others. Today, waste, there's massive landfills, there's massive incinerators. It's unsustainable. But this concept of symbiotic living is where we take from nature and what we give back as the waste material is beneficial. That's actually how nature has been created, that we live that way. Alternative energy, just like the cows, they give their dung. It's good for fertilizer, but we also have biogas plants where we put the cow dung in these biogas plants. And we also put the scraps that are left behind in food, like certain types of peels and stems or uneaten food. Actually, it can produce electricity. We put that, the food waste and the cow dung in these bioglass pans or plants, and it creates a gas that we cook all our food with. Practically all the food we cook with for the community is with that gas. There's solar power. There's power created by different natural machines that are run by the oxen, the bulls, and they actually love to do it if you give them nice rest and give them nice food and give them nice love. They like exercise. And they like to be productive when they get exercise. It's just like, you know, cows, they like to just eat and give milk and stuff like that. If you treat them really with love. But bulls like to do stuff. Give them nice things to do with compassion, they're really happy. And they create electricity. We have Ayurveda, along with Ayurvedic massage and Ayurvedic doctors. We have an Ayurvedic garden where they grow the Ayurvedic plants according to tradition. Natural nursery. It's about 2 acres, and they grow 500 different plants and 350 in large quantities that we actually give to our neighbors for very low cost. And one of the really special things that we're just developing is our rural empowerment, wherein we're sharing what we're learning with the villages. There's tremendous poverty in these villages, and a lot of disease, and a lot of illiteracy. So through Krishna consciousness, giving them better education, but we're teaching them how to grow the right trees and how to grow the right plants in a natural way. We're teaching them this biotechnology of sewage management and waste management, teaching them cottage industries. How much plastic do you see? In India, there's plastic bags everywhere. What do you do with them? One of the things we do is we just go around and collect plastic. And there's a way to make rope, really strong, good rope out of just old plastic bags that people throw out. You just process it. So the villagers, they make rope out of useless plastic and they actually make a living out of it. You just teach them how to do it. Hand looms and different kinds of natural foods. Teaching them and helping them to develop water conservation. Bhaktivedanta Hospital also is developing clinics and camps. So in this way, but it's all based on the foundation of bhakti. And this is the principle that Prabhupada taught when he turned off that water faucet. That if we actually have true devotion, yoga means to live in harmony with Krishna, with God, with each other, and with nature. And to live with compassion. And Srila Prabhupada really emphasized this simple living and high thinking. And he really emphasized communities based on these values and these technologies. And when we have this life of simple living, high thinking, we could really, really value the gifts that we have and be happy. Srila Prabhupada said, for a devotee, just chanting Hare Krishna and just being with other devotees and having a little prasad is all we need to be happy. Whether we're billionaires or whether we're sadhus living on a riverbank. So I was asked to talk about our eco village. And these are some of the inspirations we've been trying to develop. We're still very much at beginning stages. That we're inspired chanting Hare Krishna. And by Prabhupada turning off that water.
Thank you.